Welcome to the fifth edition of the Classic of the Month. Tonight, Supper's Ready, Part 1. There's no better way to start this analysis than by quoting Mark Spicer from his paper, Large-Scale Strategy and Compositional Design in the Early Music of Genesis. Supper's Ready chronicle a John Englishman's twisted vision of the apocalypse, the classic contest of good against evil, as seen through a decisively British lens. Supper's Ready is formed by seven scenes or tableaus. I will analyze each portrait, discussing the music and the lyrics as they appear. In doing so, the story behind the piece will unfold, and with all the pieces of the puzzle in their place, we will be able to appreciate the greater design of the piece. In each section, interspersed with the lyrics, I will include the program notes written by Gabriel himself in order to help fans understand the story. These notes were distributed among the audience during Genesis concerts in 1973. There is one structural aspect of the whole piece that needs to be highlighted now. If you're familiar with Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, both the original and ELP's version, you will know that the author was inspired by a series of paintings by Victor Hartmann. Mussorgsky included, between some pieces, short interludes called promenades that illustrate the moment when the viewer is walking from one picture to the other. Supper's Ready also has promenades between some tableaus and will be treated separately. Thus, the analysis will be done based on the following overall structure. 1. Lover's Leap. 2. Promenade 1. 3. The Guaranteed Eternal Sanctuary Man. 4. Promenade 2. 5. Ignaton and Itzhakon and their Band of Merry Men. 6. Promenade 3. 7. How Dare I Be So Beautiful. 8. Willow Farm. 9. Promenade 4. 10. Apocalypse in 9x8. And 11. As Sure As X Is X. Before jumping into the music, let's highlight some features of the art cover done by Paul Whitehead. In the resources section, you will find a link to an article where Paul Whitehead himself describes the cover. If you're not reading the article while listening to the audio program, you might want to have your copy of the album cover to follow this explanation. Note that in the back, you can see the croquet scene depicted in Nursery Crime. This was included in order to provide continuity to the aesthetics established by Whitehead in the two previous albums. Quoting Whitehead, "Foxtrot was a follow-up to Nursery Crime, and it was our goal to continue to use the cover imagery to poke fun at British high society, where Peter, Mike, and Tony had all come from. The cover of Nursery Crime painted a scary portrait of the game of croquet, a staple of aristocratic entertainment, and so we chose another activity associated with a privileged class, fox hunting, as the main theme for the new record." There are two direct references to lyrics in the album, the four horsemen of the apocalypse and the six saintly shrouded men move across the lawn slowly, the seven walks in front with a cross held high in hand. The fox is able to escape the chase by hopping on an ice block and moving away from the shore. In the 70s, in the US, pretty women were known as foxes, so here we have the fox disguised as a sexy lady. Now, if you look closely, you will see that the first horse to the right is clearly excited by this sexy fox. As a final prelude before starting with Lover's Leap, let me tell you a short story. Although I'm not a collector, I happen to own an autographed version of the book Genesis, I Know What I Like, by Armando Gallo, published in 1980. This is an excerpt of the book, page 49, where Gabriel tells Gallo a story that lies the foundation for the piece and helps in understanding the whole conceptual framework. One night, at Jill's, Gabriel's wife, parents' house in Kensington, when everyone had gone to bed, we just stared at each other and strange things began to happen. We saw other faces in each other, and I was really frightened, in fact. It was almost as if something else had come into us and was using us as a meeting point. And there was a thing later on, when Jill suddenly became a medium. Fortunately, it hasn't happened since, because it terrified her, and me in a sense, because she started spouting in a different voice. The room was decorated in turquoise and purple, which are colors that are both quite high in the frequency range, and I think that it was like an echo chamber for what was going on. The curtain flew wide open, though there was no wind, and the room became ice cold. And I did feel that I saw figures outside, figures in white cloaks, and the lawn I saw them on wasn't the lawn that was outside. It was like a Hammer horror film, except that it was for real. I was shaking like a leaf and in a cold sweat. And eventually, I made a cross with a candlestick and something and held it up to Jill when she was talking in this voice. That's how I got into thinking about good and evil and forces working against each other. That's the sort of things that Supper's Ready was fed on. This was the thing, you see. This is why I was put into this state of mind, really, only because the cross had worked. The cross as a thing meant nothing to me. I did it because I had seen horror films and just anything really that might have worked. I was singing my heart out there when I used to sing the New Jerusalem. I was singing for my life. I was saying this is good over evil and, you know, it was an old-fashioned gesture, but I meant it, and I was fighting. Let's proceed with the musical analysis of Supper's Ready, beginning with Lover's Leap. Gabriel's description of this section is Lover's Leap, in which two lovers are lost in each other's eyes and found again transformed in the bodies of another male and female. The first thing to point out is that Supper's Ready has no opening section, no intro. This is very unusual in long conceptual pieces. From the first beat of the first measure, Gabriel starts to sing with instrumental accompaniment. Notice that Gabriel's voice is doubled, the second voice an octave higher. Since the lyrics have been written in first person, this effect could very well represent the split into two different entities that is described in the lyrics. The structure of this section is A, B, interlude, A, B, and coda. Let's identify each section while we listen to this fragment.
Walking across the sitting room, I turn the television off. Sitting beside you, I look into your eyes. As the sound of motor cars fades in the night time, I swear I saw your face change. It didn't seem quite right. And it's
B.
Hello, babe, with your guardian eyes so blue. Hey, my baby, don't you know our love is true?
Brief instrumental interlude.
Coming closer with our eyes, a distance falls around our bodies. Out in the garden, the moon seems very bright. Six saintly shrouded men move across the lawn slowly. The seventh walks in front with a cross held high in hand, and it's
B.
Hey, babe, your supper's waiting for you. Hey, my baby, don't you know our love is true?
Coda.
I've been so far from here, far from your warm arms. It's good to feel you again. It's been a long, long time, hasn't it?
Notice that the first verse is a very close description of Peter and Jill's experience. The only major change is the setting, from the bedroom to the sitting room. Also, notice that the doubled voice, separated by an octave, only occurred during sections A. It is a very effective way to describe the fact that both male and female are being affected by the same supernatural phenomena. The reference to supper as a religious experience, obviously the Last Supper, is reinforced from the very beginning of the song with a strong image of seven saintly shrouded men, the front man carrying a cross. Also, note that there are seven of them, and the piece has seven tableaus. Finally, I believe that more than the bodies of another male and female as described by Gabriel, what we have here is a regression to a past life when these lovers had already met. Read again the lyrics of the coda with this interpretation. I've been so far from here, far from your warm arms. It's good to feel you again. It's been a long, long time, hasn't it? From a musical point of view, Mark Spicer points out a clever modulation from E to B flat, a distant key, to accompany the phrase, I swear I saw your face change.
As the sound of motor cars fades in the nighttime, I swear I saw your face change. It didn't seem quite right.
The main function of the short instrumental interlude is to take the key back to E in order to repeat A with the second verse. Now let's continue with Promenade 1. There is a form used during the Baroque period that perfectly describes the form of this promenade, chaconne. In essence, a chaconne is used as a vehicle for doing variations over a repeated short harmonic progression. Notice that the two acoustic guitars are always shifting between the same two arpeggios. At the beginning, the guitars are played solo to establish this harmonic progression. Try to listen only to the guitars during the entire section until the end of the flute solo. You will see that they don't move away from these two arpeggios. This chaconne has four variations. 1. Choral arrangements, the first time alone and the second with keyboard embellishments. 2. Keyboard solo. 3. Guitar and bass solo. 4. Flute solo. After the flute solo, the guitars modulate to G minor in preparation for the tonality of the next tableau, which is A minor, so this section can be regarded as the intro to the second tableau. Next is the guaranteed eternal sanctuary man. Gabriel's description of this section is, the lovers come across a town dominated by two characters, one a benevolent farmer and the other a head of a highly disciplined scientific religion. The latter likes to be known as the guaranteed eternal sanctuary man and claims to contain a secret new ingredient capable of fighting fire. This is a falsehood, an untruth, a whopper, and a taradiddle, or to put it in clearer terms, a lie. The structure of this section is intro, A, B, and coda. The analysis of Starless included an explanation of a harmonic resource known as harmonic pedal. Note that in the A sections, Rutherford keeps a bass ostinato on the note A while the harmony moves. This is another great example of a harmonic pedal used very effectively. On the B sections, the pedal is broken and the bass supports the ingenious harmonic changes that support the lyrics. Let's identify each section while we listen to this fragment. Intro. Coda. The short coda with the boys' chorus has a very clever harmonic construction. At the beginning, the organ plays a dissonant chord on top of which the boys sing. This chord is made up by mixing two chords simultaneously, A minor, which is the tonality of this tableau, and D major, which is the tonality of the next one. So, by doing this, Banks creates a tonal ambiguity that is broken when the boys' choir literally spell out the D major chord. Let's listen to it again. Let's move on to Promenade 2. This short instrumental fragment features a flute solo and is based on the melody of the verse A from Lover's Leap. This promenade leads us to Ignaton and Itzhakon and their band of merry men. Gabriel's description of this section is, "Who the lovers see, clad in grays and purples, awaiting to be summoned out of the ground. At the guaranteed eternal sanctuary man's command, they put forth from the bowels of the earth to attack all those without an up-to-date eternal life license, which were obtainable at the head office of the GESM's religion." As Mark Spicer correctly points out, this plateau is based on an obsessive repetition of a single chord, in this case, D major. In rock parlance, this is often described as a one-chord jam. This obsessive repetition, coupled with the militaristic use of the snare, provides a very effective description of the battle. The structure of this section is intro, which is the battle preparation, A, B, C, which is instrumental, and A prime. Wearing feelings on introduction, our faces, battle our preparation. We walked across the fields to see the children of the West.
saw a host of dark-skinned warriors standing still below the ground.
Hey, 1/4 jam on E major. B. Riff control section on G. C. Instrumental development. First, a guitar solo based on the one chord jam on D major until minute 8:01. Then, the one chord jam is released. Notice that the drum pattern stops abruptly, leaving a solo interplay of two guitars. This signals the end of the battle. The guitar pattern is now taken by the organ as the one chord jam pattern returns in preparation for A prime. A prime, one chord jam on D major. I label this last section A prime because of the modification brought in by the organ pattern that carries on from the previous instrumental section. Also, notice that the drum pattern has changed from a military snare drum pattern to a syncopated rhythm based on the use of hi-hat and bass drum. In regards to the lyrics, as in The Guaranteed Eternal Sanctuary Man, these two plateaus reflect a strong and cynical criticism to religion and their leaders. GESM describes the ascent of a religious leader, and in this plateau, we see their followers fighting against the dark-skinned warriors who have not embraced the real faith. The wonderful phrase, "wearing feelings on our faces while our faces took a rest," to me, represents the hypocritical attitude of religion fanatics that conveniently justify their radical attitudes with their personal interpretation of whatever sacred text they are supposedly following. Let's move on to Promenade 3. This short promenade can be considered a coda from the previous plateau. The one chord jam is finally abandoned while a gentle guitar solo paves the way for the mood of the next plateau. An effective crossfade is built and serves to incorporate the first two chords of the next section. we reach "How Dare I Be So Beautiful." Gabriel's description of this section is, in which our intrepid heroes investigate the aftermath of the battle and discover a solitary figure obsessed by his own image. They witness an unusual transmutation and are pulled into their own reflections in the water. This plateau offers a radical contrast with its predecessor. Whereas on the previous one, we heard a strong rhythmic section with a typical rock harmonic structure, we are now submerged in an impressionistic landscape, a minimalistic approach based on a few dispersed chords built in such a way as to provide a sense of tonal ambiguity. There's no structure as such, just a free flow of chords and Gabriel singing almost in a recitative style.
Wandering in the chaos the battle has left, we climb up the mountain of human flesh to a plateau of green grass and green trees full of life. A young figure sits still by a pool. He's been stamped human bacon by some butcher tool. Social security took care of this lad. We watch in reverence as Narcissus is turned to a flower. A flower?
This ends the first part of the Supper's Ready analysis. Next month, we will complete the analysis of this excellent masterpiece.